Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I am absolutely blasted to have a man who can only be described as a legend in our industry, Charles Petzold, author, as he says, of a couple books on Windows, also a now employee of Xamarin. Many things to talk with him about. Charles, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great.
You must know, I mean, we've talked before, you've been on the podcast before, but you must know that you are seen as not just another author, but as the guy we all learned Windows from.
Yeah, it was, however, that was about 20 years ago, you know. It's funny, a lot of people who come up to me and say, oh, I really learned Windows programming from your books. It was in the early 90s that happened. Some possibly in the late 80s as well. So it was a while ago.
You also wrote a couple extraordinary books that were not mainstream programming books, but that really pushed, I think, a bit on the envelope, as they say, of technical writing and explored some more esoteric topics.
Well, in one sense, I'm not sure code, the book Code, could be considered that esoteric. I mean, it's basically a how computers work book. Mm-hmm. And that book is still selling fairly well.
It
actually earns me some royalties, which is not the case with a lot of the programming books at this point. Mm-hmm. The other one is more recent, the Annotated Turing, which is an extended annotation of Alan Turing's famous seminal paper on computability. That was a very hard book to write, but I'm very proud of it.
It is an extraordinary book. And as much as I want to talk to you about that, you're doing some things now that I would not have predicted based on what you were talking about the last time we spoke. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you came to be? First of all, you were writing for a couple years for MSDN about DirectX, which was in C++. Do I have that right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. It was... some of this stuff, that particular column in MSDN Magazine came about from my Windows 8 book. What happened with the Windows 8 book is that when I announced I would be doing a book on Windows 8, on my blog, I incited a little discussion and controversy, and there were a number of people who thought that the book should be written in C++ because it was the sixth edition of Programming Windows, and the previous five editions were all C focused. So people had the idea that Programming Windows was a book about programming close to the metal, and in that case, at that time, involved C. I wanted to write the book in C# because ever since I was introduced to C#. I believe at the same conference that you were introduced to C#, because I remember you being there about in the year 2000, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I just love C#, and it was my all-time favorite programming language, and it still is. But the people who argued in favor of C++ were making some very good points, particularly as regarding compilation to native code and being as fast as possible. And also, what was interesting to me was that Windows 8 kind of elevated the status of DirectX to almost as a big part of the primary API. DirectX was basically, and still is, being touted as the way you do high-performance graphics, high-performance text, and 3D in a Windows 8 app. And I've always been interested in graphics programming. So I was always been kind of curious about just immersing myself in DirectX and learning all about DirectX. So I kind of was talking with my editor at Microsoft Press whether we're going to do C++ or C#. And he said, if you want to do it in C#, you do it in C#. I said, okay. And, you know, maybe I'll translate all the programs to C++. Well, my editor at Microsoft Press said, then tweeted that all the programs in the book were going to be converted to C++ as well. So I was kind of committed to doing that. So I realized I was basically committed to translating all the programs in the book to C++. And it was a big job, and I hadn't done any C++ programming for years. And C++ is really changing over the years. They talk about something called modern C++ now, and it looks very different from the C++ I remember. But I started getting more interested in DirectX and was talking to my editor at MSDN Magazine, and I wanted to give myself a big challenge. So we decided I would try doing a column on DirectX programming. And I came up with a great column title, which was DirectX Factor. And after you come up with DirectX Factor as your column title, you have to do the column, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I enjoyed doing this column a lot. I first did a bunch of columns on audio, high-performance audio in DirectX. And I did a sample program in for Windows 8. This is all Windows 8 based, so I could mix the DirectX and the Windows 8 UI. I could do a Windows 8 UI in XAML and then DirectX as well. But I did this program like a DJ program where you load in one of your a file from your music library, and you get an on-screen disk, and you can twirl it around with your fingers and make it go faster or slower, you know, and backwards and all like that. It was so cool.
It sounds very, very cool.
And I eventually did a program for the column that was basically a simulation of a mini Moog and a little analog synthesizer, except all done digitally, of course. And I was having a good time with this column, except for a few problems. The column was taking an extremely inordinate amount of time to write. And you've done magazine writing. You just can't say, well, this column took me twice as long as a normal column, so I should get paid twice as much for it.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
But it was taking a long, long time. And another problem was that we couldn't actually discern if anybody was reading the column. The readership of the column seemed to be very low, which is disturbing. And at some point I thought, you know, I'm enjoying this, and I would love to do DirectX professionally. I don't know, maybe somebody will hire me for this. And I did a couple blog entries where I expanded on stuff that was in the column. They were about direct write, and one of them was about pagination and including like making all the lines of each page come out the same point at the bottom of the page. And another one was about doing text effects such as double underlining. There's a facility in direct write where you can in a very structured way introduce more text effects such as double underlining. And I spent a long time on these two blog entries, and there's like base seminal information in there. It is some people who need to do this, who will eventually stumble upon these blog entries, will be extremely thankful. But meanwhile, there didn't seem to be anybody interested in this. And I thought, surely there's some like ebook reader people out there who want to do a high-performance ebook reader on Windows 8 using DirectWrite. I can do that, but nothing. And it just got to a point where I was spending a lot of time, you know, getting poorer all the time as I was doing this. And about early this year, I did a short blog entry saying, "Hey, I'm available for being hired," and I got very few responses. But one of the responses I got was from Xamarin. I jumped on it. So this is, I don't know, it's this industry is so weird how one's life can change so rapidly. And like, if you had told me 4 years ago, if you had told me, you're going to be spending nearly 2 years of your life going back to C++, I would have said you were insane. There's no way I'm going to abandon C# for C++. No way. But there I was. I was doing C++. And if during that time somebody had told me, you know, next year you're going to be a full-time employee of a really hip company in this industry, again, I would have thought that was insane. I've been doing freelancing since 1985, you know. But here I am. I am a Xamarin employee and damn proud of it.
There you go. And I have a friend I will share with you who says that taking a full-time job like that after you've been consulting is trading the illusion of independence for the illusion of security.
It's been interesting. Xamarin has a lot of remote employees.
Yes.
They have offices in Boston and offices in San Francisco. I am in the documentation team. I'm not one of the developers. That's a lot of responsibility. But the documentation team has remote workers spread out from Belfast to Hawaii.
Wow.
With a guy who lives in San Francisco, but who's sometimes in Australia. So it's really wild.
You've been focusing in Xamarin on Xamarin Forms.
Yes.
Which is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you didn't get a chance to take a look at my blog, but I wrote it, if I were Miguel de Ucasa, and what I said in that was I would put all my eggs in Xamarin Forms and Ooh. Lowering the cost of entry and expanding Xamarin Forms as much as possible to facilitate that cross-platform abstraction.
Yeah.
You think that's nuts?
It's not necessarily nuts. I think there is... We should back up a little and talk about Xamarin Forms in the context of the other Xamarin products. I was hired in February as a contractor specifically to write about Xamarin Forms, which wasn't even called Xamarin Forms at the time, and it was still a secret product. And as I discovered. I found that I was a really good fit for writing about this product. Even though it draws upon the APIs of Windows Phone and iPhone and Android, it's my background in the Windows-based platforms was really helpful because there's a binding model in there that's very much Windows, and it supports XAML, which is cool as well. But anyway. What is Xamarin Forms and where does it fit in? Well, the company Xamarin is only a few years old, but it arose out of the Mono project, which was a porting. Originally, it was a porting of the .NET framework to Linux, so that you and the C# compiler, so you could do C# and the .NET, at least the .NET based class library, on Linux. And there was the company was bought by anyway. There's some history. Da, 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 da. But Xamarin was formed a few years ago, and to focus on mobile platforms. And there's three basic parts of the Xamarin platform at this time. The what's called the Xamarin platform. There's Xamarin.Mac and Xamarin.iOS and Xamarin.Android. And what you do with these three packages is that you can target the native API of the Mac or iPhone/iPad or Android devices using C# and the non-UI stuff, the .NET based class library. But you are basically targeting the native APIs of these platforms using C# and using .NET idioms, C# and .NET idioms. So I think these platforms remain vitally important. Because if you need to do something that's very iPhone-ish or very Android-ish, and you want to do that in C#, as we all do,
absolutely.
These packages are still vitally important. In fact, if you search around on the Xamarin site, you'll find a document called, it's like a white paper. That was very important for me to learn about the big picture for Xamarin. It's called Key Strategies for Mobile Excellence. And it's kind of like a marketing document, but targeted somewhat to developers as well. Because there's virtually everybody who, it seems to me, virtually everybody who works at Xamarin is a programmer of some sort, and they're, you know, they're selling products for programmers. So, and they actually, at one point in this document, criticize what's called the magic box approach, which is an abstraction that where you can write a single code base and target multiple platforms.
I believe one of the co-founders was quoted as saying, write once, run everywhere is a unicorn.
Yeah, yeah. That does not surprise me. It's so people who have known Xamarin for a while and known that kind of philosophy might be a little surprised about Xamarin Forms, because Xamarin Forms is an attempt to define a new API that can translate to the native APIs on iPhone and Android and Windows Phone. So you really are writing one program and compiling it, building it for these three platforms. And it works. It is certainly not a single solution to this problem, though. I mean, it's a lot of what it does really cool. I mean, if you say, if you want a slider in Xamarin Forms, and you build it for the iPhone and Android and Windows Phone, you get an iPhone slider and an Android slider and a Windows Phone slider. You know, it's not, it goes down to the native APIs of these three platforms. And there's a lot you can do like that. And one of the interesting things are the toolbar items that you can add to a page. And in the iPhone and the Android, they show up as little icons on the top. And on Windows Phone, they show up as a app bar items on the bottom of the screen. So it's an authentic abstraction of the different UI protocols on the three platforms. At this point, it's still in its infancy. I think there's going to be a lot of enhancements to Xamarin Forms over the years. There's certain things that you can't do in Xamarin Forms quite yet. I'll give you one example. One big example is File.io. As you know, I'm mostly familiar with Windows Phone. You have this concept of application local storage, where an app can store data that's just used by itself, and it's persistent, and it doesn't disappear until you uninstall the app from the phone. And there's similar concepts on the iPhone and Android. Well, if you want to do this in your Xamarin Forms app right at the moment, you have to write platform-dependent code.
But there's a mechanism for doing so. I mean,
yeah, there's a they've built in a lot of interesting mechanisms. Oh, a lot. Several interesting mechanisms for embedding platform-specific code in what's basically your cross-platform app.
Right. And I think that's very important, is that you can, first of all, that you can talk to platform-specific, and secondly, that you can create platform-specific rendering.
Yeah.
So you can tweak what things look like, or you can even make them, you can even extend what they've done by writing your own rendering. So I agree that it's in its infancy, but it's clearly an extensible framework.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interest in enhancing this thing over the years. People might be wondering about how this looks in Visual Studio, for example. Well, when you make a Xamarin Forms solution in Visual Studio. There's a template for doing this. And you get four projects. You get a iOS project, you get an Android project, you get a Windows Phone project, and then you get the sanest way to do it. The fourth project is a portable class library, which is accessed by all the three application projects. So most of your code goes in this portable class library project. And then the individual platforms call into it to create a new page. And then this page uses the Xamarin Forms controls, which are then translated into the platform-specific codes. It's nicely done. It's really nicely done.
One of the things that you touched on, but we should really dive for a moment, is that it's XAML. That you certainly can write all these controls in C Sharp, but you can also write them in something that looks very, very, very familiar to a XAML programmer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When some people who have a lot of familiarity with XAML, when they first encounter the Xamarin Forms XAML, say it isn't XAML because they're not using their familiar controls in it. They're not using text block. You know, in Xamarin Forms you use label, but XAML is really a syntax of a markup language. With some base stuff built in that's really platform independent in a sense. In its broadest utility, XAML is used for instantiating and initializing objects. I mean, that's really what it's for. So you can have a lot of different types of applications that are built on XAML, and Xamarin Forms is one of them. And that is really nice. For a while, as I was learning Xamarin Forms, as it was being developed before it was released, and as I was writing some chapters about it, the XAML wasn't really ready. And so I thought, well, you know, I can do it like a bulk of the book, that's all the code solutions, and maybe introduce XAML in a later chapter. Well, as soon as XAML became available, it was so nicely done, and it works so well, with some exceptions, that it was just very clear to me that I would have to rethink the book and introduce XAML at a fairly early point.
Let me interrupt you. I just want to make sure you're saying something that you want to say publicly. You've now talked about the book twice.
Yes. I was under the assumption for a long time that this book was secret, but there was a blog entry on the Xamarin website that said I was writing a book about Xamarin Forms, so it's public.
Great. Well, if you need a beta reader, please keep me in mind, because I can't wait to see it. Is there an ETA on it?
Not really. I would say I think we'll see something before the end of the year. There may. Well, you're speaking at Evolve, are you not? Yes. Okay, Evolve is the big Xamarin mobile conference, which is in Atlanta. It's the 5 days in the beginning of Atlanta, October 6th to 10th in Atlanta. And there'll be, I think you're doing a talk on cross-platform. Are you doing specifically Xamarin Forms?
Actually, my talk is on taking web apps and moving them to Xamarin using Razor syntax.
Okay. But I see a bunch of Xamarin Forms talks here. But I don't know. This is a good conference for people to go to if they are interested in. Are you interested in writing iPhone and Android apps in C Sharp? Well, yeah. Who couldn't be interested in that? C Sharp is a great language. You mentioned Miguel a little while ago. Did you see him at Build? He did one of the sessions at Build where he did a very iPhone specific app. He was running Visual Studio inside a virtual machine on a Mac on the stage at Microsoft Build. And he wrote a little app for the iPhone that did some very specific iPhone image processing stuff. And at one point, this was during a time I was still doing a lot of C++ programming for my column. And he used an expression regarding async and using the await operator in C#. And he says, because we're not savages now, we can use await. And it was like, oh, it really went to the core of what I was struggling with, doing async in C++ without the wonderful await operator, which is probably, await is probably the greatest enhancement to a programming language since, I don't know, forever, let's say. It just makes asynchronous programming so smooth that it's hard to, once you've used that, it's hard to go back to a programming language that doesn't have await.
I agree with that, especially going back to a programming language that doesn't have garbage collection.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff in C#. Like I said, it's been my favorite language, and it's been great for me to find a job that where I'm you know, doing little sample programs in C# and doing mobile programming and writing about it. And it's just a great fit for me.
So my dream is to put a microphone in the room and get Anders and Miguel around the mic and just walk away.
Yeah, they were on stage together at Build when they announced when the .NET Foundation was announced, which was shortly after Anders clicked a button on stage and published an open source version of the C# compiler,
yes.
The famous Roslyn project. He and Miguel announced the .NET Foundation, mm-hmm. which is, again, a repository of probably .NET-based class libraries in an open source version. So there's some good stuff happening.
Okay, so let me focus you in on, you've been working on Xamarin Forms, and you gave a great capsule overview of Xamarin Forms. Right now, the documentation on Xamarin Forms on the site, on the Xamarin site, is very, very good for getting you going.
Mm-hmm.
But would you agree that the advanced topics are not quite as well covered?
Yeah, there's a lot of progress being done there. Those are all my workmates you're talking about, mm-hmm. at this point. And I think there's a bunch of good documents on there. I kind of volunteered to do the introduction to XAML, mm-hmm. which is about 5 parts, I think. It got to be a little long. But so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to get you going. And then there's a bunch of, if you look on the Xamarin site, and there's a bunch of working with documents that cover a bit of the more obscure stuff for working with files, or working with maps, or gestures, or using some platform-specific stuff. There's also some documents on using your own renderers, which are the type of class that are in the platforms that render the abstracted class. But yeah, there's.
And we'll put links to each of these pages.
Yeah.
That on the Introduction to Xamarin Forms page, on the left side, there's a column which you can expand the working with that you were just describing.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, documentation is always a work in progress. So, and my coworkers are working on it.
But it's interesting that Xamarin, certainly when you talk to folks from Xamarin, they all say very clearly that you want to build platform-specific code, and what Xamarin brings to the party is C#. But as you alluded to, this is something of a departure. This is a level of abstraction that you write to that is not, you're not writing to the platform, although what's produced is platform-specific, but you're writing to the abstraction of Xamarin Forms. And that's, I find, a very exciting development, but an interesting departure for them to have taken.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know the background behind this, whether you know, it was just kind of an experiment to see if this this could actually work or not. But it's interesting, and I think it's complementary to the very platform-specific programming that you can do for the iPhone or Android. And you can, what Xamarin Forms lets you do, for example, suppose you have an iPhone app that's pretty much all built, but you want to add a couple pages to it, and you would rather not deal with the iPhone API at this point, you can actually, from your iPhone app, spin off a Xamarin Forms page. And if you look at the platform-specific code that's generated for the three platforms in the standard template, you can see how the Xamarin Forms page is integrated into each of the platforms. So you can go that way as well. You can have an app that's mostly Xamarin Forms and do a little platform specificity, or you can have an app that's mostly platform specific and then add a couple pages of Xamarin Forms in there. It's flexible, and so I think for that reason, it's more of a complementary product rather than something that's going to make platform specific programming unnecessary.
Well, I can dream. let me ask you, do you think that Xamarin Forms introduces MVVM into this world?
Yeah, I think that's my chapter 7. I think so.
Well, there was a softball point. I mean, because that, again, is an interesting development of MVVM, which was developed essentially with WCF and Silverlight.
Yeah.
Coming over into the Xamarin world and providing a very powerful pattern for development that was not necessarily the native pattern for iOS or Android.
Right. I think that MVVM is also rather geared towards XAML, I think. It was developed with XAML in mind, was it not? I think so. Mm-hmm. So it works very well with XAML-based data bindings. There's this philosophy that when you're using MVVM, the code behind file of your XAML should be almost nothing, aside from the standard initialize component to call. If you can make that code behind file as sparse as that, you are using MVVM in a good way. And of course, there's always stuff you need to put in the code behind file, but it's a goal rather than a requirement. It just fits so well with this. I actually talked a bit over with my boss early on about where we introduce MVVM in the book. And it was because it's a little unusual. It's an unusual framework for many of the developers who've been working on, you know, mostly with iPhone and Android. We didn't want it really up front, as if to say, If you're doing Xamarin Forms programming, you must use MVVM. We certainly didn't want you to do that or even imply it. However, what's interesting about MVVM is that it's all based on the data bindings, and you need to talk about data bindings very early in a book. And so you need to have some kind of class that provides the data for the data bindings. And if you don't call that class a view model, you know, if you just name it something else and don't append the words view model onto the end, you can actually be discussing MVVM without actually discussing MVVM.
Without the scary words, right?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
But if you look at, as soon as XAML was introduced into Xamarin Forms, I think the use of MVVM was pretty much guaranteed.